This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Press release, West Shore RCMP, file number 2024-7098. It says on April 16th, 2024, yesterday, at approximately 7:12 p.m. So this is last night. It says West Shore RCMP received a complaint from a witness who advised there was a man on the Galloping Goose Trail near Atkins Road. Hey, that's where the lovely sidewalk's going in. And Bryden Road. Oh, maybe a different spot. Who was brandishing a knife and threatening people with it. Isn't it a great age to be a pedestrian? You know, the nice part about driving places is that I can lock my car doors and roll up the windows. I'm sorry. I'm just going to say that. Where's your RCMP? It says frontline officers attended the area immediately. Thank you. And located the suspect who was arrested without further incident. Says the suspect was arrested for uttering threats, possession of a weapon for a dangerous purpose, and possession of a prohibited device. Says upon searching the suspect, seized a knife that opened with centrifugal force, which is against the law to possess. It's like a butterfly knife, I think they used to call those. Unless I'm mistaken. It says, at the time of his arrest, the suspect was displaying symptoms of being intoxicated by alcohol. The 47-year-old male suspect was held in police custody, set to appear before the courts today. There's then a quote here from Corporal Nancy Segar. It says, thankfully, no one was physically injured in this incident. We want to thank the witness who called police right away and provided a detailed description of the suspect and his location, which allowed police to apprehend the suspect quickly. That's, again, from Corporal Nancy Segar, West Shore RCMP. I want to say a big thank you, West Shore RCMP members out there on patrol today, those of you who responded last night, 7 o'clock. You can understand how scary that can be to encounter something like that on a regional trail. Nice place out in Langford. And the Galloping Goose, beautiful trail system, by the way. It goes all through that municipality. There's the various access points it has in various neighborhoods become busy thoroughfares regardless of where they are. It was actually mentioned during the press conference yesterday in terms of facilitating better access to it. 7 o'clock last night, there was a man on the Galloping Goose Trail area near Atkins and Bryden. He was brandishing a knife and he was threatening, it says, people with it. Somebody called it in. West Shore RCMP attended the area. One in custody. Everybody's safe. Thank you, everybody, for standing vigilant. Hopefully, that guy gets the help that he needs. And hopefully, he is not released back out into public to pose a danger to both himself and others, as far too often seems to be the case. On that note, earlier today, we actually had a conversation with Victoria Mayor Marian Alto. There was a safety summit yesterday after yet another stabbing happened, this one at the corner of Douglas and Yates, during the show, broad daylight, relatively early morning, earlier this week. Let's take a listen.
Rash of stabbings, etc. So give us your perspective as to, you know, what's going on and how you feel about things right now.
Thanks for the opportunity. I appreciate it. And first and foremost, of course, we always want to express our sympathy and note our thoughts and hearts are with the folks, the families who have been affected directly and indirectly by the recent rash of incidents, as you've identified them. But I also want to acknowledge that, you know, because of this and so many different reasons, the breakdown in civil society and the changes that have happened in the way we work together and live together since COVID, and I know a whole variety of other things, we really are in a different place than we've been in many, many times.
Interesting. Okay, I'm listening.
And for that reason, the city, and I'm particularly working very closely with the police and with Chief Manick, who's spoken out very clearly in the last few days, but over time as well, just to acknowledge that, you know, folks are in a place where they don't always feel safe, and we're working together to try and make sure that that's a feeling that we can address and that we can improve and that we can make sure it's something that doesn't unduly change the way people enjoy and experience Victoria. I do want to say that we have absolute confidence in our police service. They do amazing work. As you'll know, this is the first time since I've been on a council this year where the council approved everything that the police requested in their budget and, in fact, added additional funds to it.
She's right, and I've had all sorts of, you know, trying to explain that scenarios that we've put together, but there was a financial appreciation for the police department at the City of Victoria, unlike anything I have seen, certainly. And, you know, she got elected 2011 at the by-election. It was when Marian Alto was first elected councillor. And I've been doing this off and on since even before that.
For some specialized downtown officers to do what used to be called, you know, walking the beat. And that sense of, you know, getting to know your local police service and having that visibility is really helpful as well. So, the police have commented in the last few days that although certainly this is concerning because it has received a lot of attention and it's been everyone's minds, unfortunately, it is not terribly different than what has happened in other years, according to their statistics. And
I just want to point out, yeah, people do get stabbed downtown all the time. People are like, oh, Adam, you're a fearmonger. I'm like, nope. I just see the stats. See, here's the thing. Vic PD has an open data policy. There's a portal website that you can go to. It's not updated that day usually. So if you want to know what happened today, you used to have to rely on Vic PD press releases. Now, during COVID-19, when the crime wave started, Vic PD, recognizing something was wrong, started issuing more regular releases. And it made sense because of COVID provisions, we couldn't just walk down to the police station, you know, and attend a presser. The idea of people being cooped up in their homes and not having the ability to attend physically many locations, I think, created a greater need with the public for that flow of information. And Vic PD, of course, responding in kind. I think they issued something like 500 press releases that year. It was a totally unprecedented number. Many of them were concerning, but they reflected a sea change in public safety that we have seen that, unfortunately and sadly, still has not completely resolved itself. Things are better now than they were. I think the stranger attacks peaked in, when was it? I want to say 2021. By late 2021, we start to get a crest in terms of the random attacks, which I think all of us find terrifying because you never know who's going to randomly attack you. Whereas much of the violence that we've seen lately, at least to my understanding, has been linked to probably the criminal underworld, the drug trade. One criminal stabs another criminal over a dispute over a criminal enterprise, which is different than having a random person attack you for no reason, which is truly terrifying.
That isn't so much to give us comfort as just to give us some context.
Yeah, that's fair.
But having said that, of course we're concerned, and that we're working very closely with the police to address as much as we can the responses, but also to do the preventive work as well. And as you know, Al, we've talked a number of times about the work the city is doing out of my office around community safety and well-being. And that's part of this conversation for sure, as we look forward in the months and years to come, about how we perhaps change the narrative, change the reality, change how we do our work around creating community safety and ensuring that is something that brings a greater degree of comfort to not just our residents, but our visitors too.
I would love downtown to feel like it used to feel. And that might sound like a weird thing to say, but I've worked off and on. I wasn't in this job, just for the record, between the end of 2012 and the very end of 2016. I was not doing this job, more or less. I came back in late 2016 and started in this time slot. I've been there since. I also did a different time slot, different job before that, from 2009 to 2012, just for the record. But to me, pre-COVID and post-COVID Victoria are different places. They feel different. I miss how home used to feel beforehand. And I hope I get to go to that place again. Because I want to. If I could buy a plane ticket to go there, I would. But it doesn't exist. It's in the past. And I'm hoping that we can find it within ourselves to get back to that place. Not just telling ourselves that we're there, not just, you know, fake it until you make it, trying to tell yourself you're there, not just, you know, staying optimistic for the sake of optimism, but actually feeling like, okay, like we're back, like we did it, we made it through. Because for me, I'm still not there. And I know a lot of other people, it's still not there as well. We want it to be, but it feels forced, or it feels like we have to overlook all these things. And I don't know how to fix that, but I was just reflecting on it the other day. One of the things that bothers me the most is I want to go home. But home's gone. And this new place, it's something different with different problems. And I still don't know how to address them yet.
And we want to make sure that all of those folks are well cared for.
I found that interesting, that the stats that Victoria Police gave, and they're stats, not saying that they're not correct, but just, you know, it's kind of the same as other years. Yet we feel that...
Texter writes, outside of your little echo chamber, many people go out and go about their lives living in perpetual fear. I didn't say I was fearful. I said it felt different. And it does. It's dirty. It's grungy. It's not as vibrant as it was before. It's not as exciting as it was before. It's not as clean as it was before. It's dirty. And even when it's not dirty, it's dirty. Like, how do I articulate this? Like, you make it sound like me, I'm the problem. And you're a garbage person for saying that. I just want you to know that. That's such an awful thing to say to somebody who's a victim. But I had a lot of people say stuff to the like that to me during COVID. And I remember the names of all of them. And I'll never forget them either. Now, COVID was a time when a lot of us lost things. And those who tried to victimize us twice, you know, we'll say that they're forgiven. But they will never, ever be forgotten. We were only going to go through a crisis like that once in our lives. Thank you for the text, though. Please keep listening.
That it's not. Can you address that a little bit as to, you know, how the city's feeling?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. Yeah, the numbers are important to know because it sets the context for sure. And it allows us to determine, I guess, whether there's anything unusual about this. And I think it's important as well that, you know, when the police spoke to those numbers, they did make the clarification, which is important, that you know, those numbers don't all speak to the type of incidents that we've been witnessing in the last number of months, but they do speak to the incidents that involve, you know, what, I think what they call them as knife edge weapons, something like that. But the reality is that I think as we've come out of COVID, and let me be clear, I don't think COVID caused this.
Didn't it? It coincided with it, certainly. Maybe something else did. I don't know.
But it's certainly accelerated. For the last number of decades, I think we've witnessed a real change in the way communities and individuals in those communities interact with one another. And we do talk now about the changes in civil society and the changes in the way we live with one another. And when you acknowledge how people interact now very often in public, and you can point to different types of behaviors where it would seem that it wouldn't have been acceptable just a few years ago, and that is a concern that's larger than just this conversation, obviously.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, you're out the square, you say, hey, buddy, how about you put some pants on? Can't say that anymore. You just avert your gaze, keep walking, try not to engage.
Mm-hmm. And
I'm sorry, but that has actually happened. That is a literal real-world example.
Certainly part of the conversation that we're having around community safety and well-being, but it's something to acknowledge that perhaps each of us do need to do a bit of self-reflection.
I was walking through Centennial Square the other day. There's a guy urinating into one of the CRD building gardens, right through the fence, just didn't care. Everybody saw it, just standing there, you know. Thankfully, his back was to the bulk of the people in Centennial Square. And there's a bathroom like 20 feet away. There's security. There's a bunch of people in the square. This is at like 2 in the afternoon, but he didn't care because he knows that the standards are different. So when Alto says, yeah, things have changed and we used to have different standards and behaviors in public, that okay, we have, but was that such a bad thing? Was that such a bad thing when we had standards on the sort of behaviors we were willing to tolerate and not tolerate? You know? I don't want to watch a guy relieving himself into the plants at the CRD building in the middle of Centennial Square on a weekday. But yet, if you come down to Centennial Square, and I saw that was last week. Did I report it? No, I just kept on going. Don't get involved. Don't let them notice you.
On what our expectations are of one another. And that isn't to say, again, that these aren't serious concerns, but it is important, I think, to, you know, you had that question at the beginning, how am I feeling? I'm feeling like it's time for us to really take some, I guess what you would call sober second thought about how we act with one another and what we expect of one another as community members. It's a big conversation, obviously, and it doesn't in any way, let me say again, take away from the concerns that I have and Chief Manick has expressed and others as well, that, you know, it's time now for us to think about, you know, just how we want to live together as a community.
I get what she's saying, at least I think I get what she's saying, but there's still that abundance of diplomacy that the mayor is known for.
Marianne Alta joining us. She's the mayor of Victoria. You mentioned this, and I'll mention it again because it always comes up on our text board. People are just like, is the city giving the police all the tools and the money? Just re-emphasize that because you mentioned it, but just talk about it again.
They actually are this time. I was astounded. I think it's because they were secretly trying to get themselves a raise like a month, month and a half later. I appreciate that. If you end up getting the raise legit through the task force, I'm still going to be skeptical, but it certainly didn't hurt your cause.
Yeah, I think that's a really important question. And I've said a couple of times, certainly lately, you know, I've been on council, you know, almost, I guess, more than 13 years now, as both a councillor and now as mayor. And again,
I remember the night she got elected, actually. It was the Johnson Street Bridge referendum day as well. It was a by-election.
I reiterate what a privilege that is. And in that time, I don't recall a year when the council has done what it did this year. And that
I don't either. I think she's right.
That is that the entire police budget, as the police service requested, was granted without change. And in fact, there was additional money added in because we were speaking with them about, you know, what could we do better, what could we do more. And so there was even additional money added in for some extra foot patrols in the downtown area. And so I think this is a real shift in the understanding of council, which really does acknowledge at this point that, you know, in our bigger conversation about community safety and well-being, the police absolutely have a role, absolutely. They're at the table, actually, when we speak about the community leaders panel.
Look, if you see the guy with the butterfly knife on the Galloping Goose Trail, I'm not going to call a counselor. I'm not going to say, wow, that guy needs some supports. No, I'm going to call 911, and ECOM's going to pick up, and they're going to say police, fire, ambulance. I'm going to say police, and I'm going to say I'm at this corner. There's a man, and he's waving a knife around. Please send help. And at that point, help will be on the way. And there is one and only one legal classification that we have carved out in our society that can respond to a situation like that, who has the training, who has the equipment, and who has the capabilities to safely de-escalate that situation and take that person into custody if necessary under the law pursuant to the criminal code, or to effect an apprehension pursuant to section, I think it's 28 of the Mental Health Act, and then transport that person to the nearest designated medical facility so that a doctor can examine them. And at that time, perhaps, take them into hospital against their will, if necessary or not. There is one and only one role, and it's police officers can do that. When you call the police officer, you get both. Yeah, you can call your peer assist care team, and hopefully when they get there, nobody tries to stab anybody. But as soon as there's a risk of violence, the police are the only option we have. We need to make sure that they are provisioned with the tools they need. We need to make sure they are supported, both emotionally, physically, and financially. And we need them to know that we have their back, because they take risks every single day. And when they're the ones running toward the danger while I'm running away, I don't want them thinking I'm not even appreciated in this job. I want them to know that they have the entire community at their back supporting them. I want that wind in their sails as they run towards danger. That's what I want. And everybody else should too.
Which is leading that initiative. Chief Manick is part of that, and as is the chief of our fire chief as well, so that other emergency response type of response as well.
Yes.
And it's, the police are part of the solution, absolutely. And we have, I think, turned a real corner in understanding that.
Final thoughts from the mayor on this. Just address it to our listening audience and those that are watching.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. And I think for me, again, you know, it's about expressing sympathy for the folks directly affected, but acknowledging that there are concerns, but also, I guess, wanting to request that people who are here as residents and visitors also remember that we have a really unique and special city, and that it's something that we're all very proud of. It's something that we speak about whenever we talk to our friends and neighbors and our relatives, and as we encourage them to come. And I think, for me, the reality here is that working together with the police, we have confidence that we're addressing these issues as best we can. We have lots of ideas that are coming in the future, not too far away. And in the face of all of that, you know, we really need to continue to show support for our businesses and our residents that are downtown, and that we want to continue to make sure that what makes us special and unique can thrive. And so I guess I had an opportunity last night to speak to one of the local resident associations. And as I said to them last night, you know, don't give up hope. This is a really unique and special city. We all know that. That's why we live here. That's why we choose to live here. And that's why we invite people into our homes and our city. And we need to keep doing that. We need to build this place and remain the special city that we are. And that's up to each of us. And, you know, Al, it's up to you, too. And I really appreciate the fact that you're always looking, you know, to showcase the best of the city, because there's a lot to showcase.
I just want to point out that we have different roles. It's not supposed to be exactly the same, and people can benefit through different specializations as all of us play our parts in this intricate mosaic that we call a Victoria community. Is it important to find the good? Yes, it is. It's also important to find the city councils giving themselves raises when nobody's looking. And hopefully, if we all do our jobs, everything gets found. All in all, though, I want to say thank you to everybody who gets up every day, does a difficult job, puts himself in harm's way to protect the innocent, to protect somebody who doesn't have the ability to protect themselves. It matters. And we're not going to get back to that point where it feels like home again, where it feels like safety again without it. So thank you. Anyway, quick break. Open line reaction. Anything goes, any topic we've discussed, 250-386-1161. Back after this.
Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070 and streaming on the iHeartRadio app.
I just checked out the maps location of where the guy with the knife got taken into custody by West Shore RCMP last night. It's the other side. It's the other end of Atkins. Atkins by Bryden. That's, you know, on the Old Island Highway, you're going down and they've got the, trying to think of where that is. It's right near where the trestle is for the ENN rail line. Where that intersects with the Trans-Canada Highway, intersects with the Old Island Highway, intersects with the Burnside Road West, as well as, it was right in there. Okay, that was actually at a different place that I had my mind's eye. My mind's eye, I was thinking it was further west, but it was actually quite a ways east. Yeah, I guess they've got the public washrooms and stuff there. They've got the Galloping Goose Regional Trail parking lot there. I could see that being an issue. But yeah, anyway. Our thanks to West Shore RCMP officers keeping us safe. Let's go next to Jeff, who's calling in for open lines. Hey, Jeff, you're on the air. How you doing?
Well, before I talk about the budget, I just want to bring up something because I was listening to question period this morning.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to see. And right now, the parliament is instituted, I guess, under the speaker's privilege. I'm not a constitutional expert, but there's somebody by the name of Christian Farr or Barr or something. Yeah, Christian First. Who's being tried or something for contempt of parliament or something.
There's a lot of somethings in there. Jeff, where are you going with this?
Well, it's basically because he refused to answer questions, something to do with the committee, certain government committee or something.
Which committee?
I'm not exactly sure, but it was a very important one.
Okay.
And because I'm not familiar with the procedure, but apparently it's very rare, and he's getting reprimanded. I'm not exactly sure what it's about, but it's so rare that it's kind of funny. Cause I think it's something. It might be something to do with like all the things to do with protocol
No, it's the Arrive Can stuff. Yeah, actually, no, we're not. I'm sure they're going to be talking about that later on in the next show.
I just don't. Oh, okay, because it's. And I was listening to. I was listening to Question Period, and it's all the same. It's all the same. Same kind of.
Yeah.
Same kind of like
we haven't listened to federal response
from Trudeau period. And everything, yeah. And it's nothing new. But on the budget, I would say it's a total joke, and it's like they can't even admit.
Yeah,
like I'm not that they're going to, but Trudeau and Freeland can't admit that stuff is not working, and they're trying to. It's like the captain of the Titanic trying to save the Titanic when it's like 60% underwater going down.
Now, what would you have them say? What would you prefer to hear?
Well, I would prefer that they give basically when they did the budget that they severely cut spending because one of the facts that Polyev made and that really stood out for me was, did you know that all the GST money right now that we collect in Canada is going 100% to debt servicing costs and the interest on the debt?
I know it's the same amount or a very similar amount. I had
seen
that.
That's what Polyev
is saying.
Yeah, and I mean, so nothing is going to any of not 1 cent of the GST right now is going to any programs or any
and you know what
or any that, debt service or that, I mean like
yeah, that debt
making
will
Canada
still,
better
that debt will still exist regardless of how people vote. So it's not.
Oh,
going
I know,
anywhere.
I know, it's ongoing. But see, that's the one problem is that it just carries on, and it's not like the government can declare bankruptcy. It just gets passed on to the next generation of taxpayer, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But we've got to get back to where people really understand that debt servicing and how much we spend on the debt and all that matters, because it, because that in and of itself, the more government spends, the more debt we get into, the less money that we can direct to programs, and the more we have to tax people, and the more we tax people, you get to a point where they're not making the country any better and the programs. Like, I personally think that Trudeau and Freeland think the government can do more than they can, and they're afraid of the private sector.
You think they're afraid of the private sector?
Well, in the sense that they don't trust it, and they're like, just look at what they tried to do with all the grocery chains and how that they couldn't really do much, and they just wasted time and energy when a lot of it is the best thing government can do is to adapt to the economy, not try and manipulate the economy.
All right. Well, Jeff, thanks for sharing that with us. Okay. All right, you take care. You have a good day. Let's go to Dave. Hey, Dave, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, 70 years ago, street in Victoria.
Yeah.
Wasn't uncommon to see somebody taking a leak.
It was different.
So my advice to all these people that are upset about it is
don't
show yourself.
Tell me that kids have to look at a man relieving himself in public with a washroom like 10 feet away
square. I'll tell you, when I was 10 years old, it was a lady relieving herself right on the sidewalk.
Dave, don't tell me that.
What are you going to do when you get home with incontinent?
How?
Fish your pants?
No, I'm going to walk to the bathroom 10 feet away, man. There's a bathroom in Centennial Square. It's open.
Every restaurant has a sign saying you can't come in here and go pee.
No, it's in Centennial Square. It happened in Centennial Square. There's a bathroom that's open. There's a public bathroom that's open there.
So what? It's a natural thing to do.
No, it isn't.
Dogs do it all the time.
Are these people dogs? Are they animals? No, they're not. They're men. They should act like men.
Oh, come on. Get over yourself.
How often did you see that?
Because somebody takes a pee? Really?
It's not a... We have rules against that, Dave. We have rules.
Oh, rules. You and your stupid rules.
You know what I'm going to do? You are way too passionate about this.
Kills all bureaucrats, and that's going to make the world a better place.
You can't do that. There's rules against that, too.
What, killing bureaucrats?
Yep.
There shouldn't be.
Yep, there is. It's very serious. It's among our most serious laws.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, there are ways to space.
Well, I mean, maybe they don't.
Why don't you just grow up and relax? You know?
No, I'm not going to relax. No, I'm not. I'm not going to relax about a guy urinating into the Centennial Square CRD headquarters plants because he just feels like it and doesn't want to walk 10 feet over.
Well,
it's lazy.
How do you know? I mean, maybe.
What do you mean, how do I know? I was there. I saw it.
Did you ask him he had to go?
Well, obviously he had to go. He was doing it.
Yeah, so there you go.
No, not there you go. We have rules around here.
Why should that be a crime?
Because it offends me.
Well, there's a lot of things that offend me, but and some of them are crimes and some of them are not.
And it's not that one?
I'll tell you,
you're not offended by that.
Yeah, I just think you're going a little overboard on some of this stuff.
By asking that somebody use the bathroom that I pay for. We pay taxes so that man could have a free bathroom. It's open 24/7.
And I get tired of you walking on the sidewalks that I paid for. There you go.
When was the last time you saw me walking on one of your sidewalks,
Why don't you go back to where you came from?
I am from here.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Where am I from?
I got you a long time
ago.
From Selkirk, Manitoba.
Ooh, that's not bad. I am from Manitoba. But, Dave, that's still here. It's Canada, man.
Yeah. There you go. Land of the free. So if I want to take a pee, it's the land of the free.
That's not what there that means. Go. No, it's not what that means. We have standards, man. It's what separates us. No, it is what separates us from the beasts.
You know, I'll tell you another one.
What?
You know the Regent Hotel downtown?
Yeah, what about it?
I used to have my tug company. I was tied up there at just off Leeson Park there.
Yeah.
And when the pub got out, all along the waterfront there, away from the street, bunch of ladies with their panties around their ankles taking a pee.
You know what, Dave? I don't believe
you. I guess I should have phoned the cops and had them arrest them all.
Dave, I don't believe you. I'm sorry.
Well, it's true.
Well,
it's true.
I don't lie,
my friend. I'm not a bureaucrat. I don't lie.
I'm not saying you're lying.
I'm telling you it's true.
I'm telling you
the truth.
Maybe it was a mirage.
And this is, no, it wasn't. It was a bunch of ladies taking a pee. No guys, just a bunch of ladies taking a pee after they left the club.
You know what, Dave? We have standards around here, and you're going to live up to them whether you like it or not, okay? I'm not going to ask twice.
Yeah, well, next time I see you, maybe I'll take a pee and see how we do.
You know what, Dave? I think you're going to come out poorly on that one, but go for it. All right, there you go. You have a good day. 250-386-1161, *1070, free call on your wireless device. Go next. Is this Ulayla Mills?
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Oh, you know, just a normal day. What's up?
Well, I'm not sure how to follow that.
Don't try, please.
So I wanted to talk about two topics. One, I just wanted to give a really quick update about what happened at Saanich last night.
Yeah, yeah.
The quick update is the surplus was passed as written with no changes, including the PPP.
Okay, so that's $980,000 to that program. Okay.
Sorry? $980,000 to that program. Near 37% of it is commitments to long-term staffing.
Okay.
Which basically means that unless, and this is a possibility that maybe was hinted at last night, unless the intention is the program will always be funded out of surplus, then it's going to create a $3.5 million or 2% tax burden over the next 4 years.
Hmm. Interesting.
So the issue has always been, I mean, the thing was approved, much as there are issues with it from our perspective, it was approved. In order to initiate it, it had to be funded.
Mm-hmm.
The challenge we have is that it's a $4.5 million commitment with a fairly light plan and should have been through the budget process, not through the surplus process, unless, and they haven't said this, but unless their intention is to, in fact, always fund it out of surplus.
Mm.
And we don't know that.
Interesting. Yeah, because the average was about $3 million a year. They normally rack up in surplus. It was six this year. I'm not sure what it would be next year. Nobody knows, I guess.
Nobody knows. I mean, you know, you would expect that the operational surplus will be in the order of, you know, $2 to $3 million, which it has been for several years.
Yeah.
And the interest windfall is probably a one-time event. I'd be surprised if they have another interest windfall in the $2 to $3 million range.
Mm-hmm.
And we asked them to consider putting that entire interest windfall actually into reserves to defer future taxes.
Yeah.
That was part of our message last night, but they went ahead with what staff had presented them. One of the interesting bits of the conversation was they spent quite a long time talking about a $300,000 grant for a turf field at Spectrum School. Great idea.
Yes.
What surplus really is for. However, most of the conversation was about a comprehensive business plan before they approved the grant.
Interesting.
And I just found that an interesting irony, given they just approved $980,000 on what is in essence a series of bullet points and a table that largely was in the previous plan.
Well, at least the parts that we can see look that way.
As far as I understand, based on what they said, that's what they've created.
Hmm.
The director of parks acknowledged that staff had a miss on that one and had not provided it.
Interesting. Very interesting. Ulayla Mills with the CRD Dog Society. The DOGG, second G, is Good Governance. You can check out their social media presence as well as online. She appeared with us on Friday's show talking about what we were expecting to happen with Saanich Council earlier this week. It looks like that has gone forward. Accountability concerns remaining there. Ulayla, thanks for the update. Anything else?
Yeah, I was listening with a lot of interest with your conversation around vacation rentals.
Yeah.
And I am I'm currently on one of the smaller northern Gulf Islands.
Okay.
And it's an issue here as it is everywhere else, but there's a different context in the smaller communities than there is in the larger communities. And that different context, particularly here, is that the housing that is needed, and it is significantly needed, needs to be affordable on the incomes that are here. And the average income on this island is just over $25,000 a year for people who are in the labor market. And
yes.
So the rent, the housing costs they can afford is somewhere under $500 a month.
Yeah.
So that's not going to be provided by changing short-term vacation rental. That is something that's going to have to be provided at a community level with some really significant thought and impact. And what they have done on this island years ago was create a seniors a seniors housing complex. Individual houses, it's a lovely little thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has 11 units. It has a waiting list of over 20, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
There are some BC Housing plans, but it keeps not getting approved by BC Housing. And there's somewhere in the order of 40 to 60 people who are insecurely housed.
Hmm.
That issue should be front and center.
Yeah.
That is where we need to go. And the vacation rentals, through the municipal and regional district tax, they provide upwards of $60,000 a year towards worker housing.
Hmm.
So it's a different context. In the larger yeah. urban centers, you've got a lot of different things going on there. And, you know, I was listening to your interview with the woman who bought specifically to get into the market
yeah.
and really resonate with the challenges she's facing. Up here in the islands, the people who are vacation renting are often folks who are second or third generation families having inherited a property.
I see.
Often in some disrepair.
Yeah.
And their ability to maintain what has been a legacy in their family depends on their ability to pay for it.
Great point. Yep. Fantastic.
And there's many
points.
Of us. Many, many, many people like that across the islands. And so you were talking about, you know, what government did and what I sort of described as a very large mallet
yeah.
when they really needed something that was a much finer and more targeted. And one of the examples I think that they should have looked at that would have been fair to both current owners and enable the changes they're talking about is, as opposed to removing the legal nonconforming rules for everyone immediately, they could have changed them to apply to the current owner, period. And so when a property sells, the new rules apply.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then the owners who are doing things legally, who have done nothing wrong, and who bought in good faith, understanding the rules under which they were, in fact, operating,
yeah.
would not be penalized. But the transition to a new policy model would be affected over the period of time there was a sale.
Hmm.
I cannot imagine, given there are some very smart people who work in policy in government, I cannot imagine that idea was not at least put forward.
No, you're correct. It must have been. And yet
you'd
it was
think.
Not heated. But yeah.
Yeah, you'd think. Then, the other thing is the principal residence requirement, which doesn't apply in the smaller communities unless they opt in.
Mm-hmm.
But it pairs with the legislation that in many places allows you to build a carriage house.
Hmm.
Now, the intention of allowing you to build a carriage house, so one of the housing changes the province made was basically everyone can have a secondary suite.
Yes.
Or a carriage house. So if they're making people have a principal residence and allowing everyone to have a carriage house, aren't they creating exactly the opposite of what they want?
Yeah, they are. Your logic is impeccable.
So anyway, I just think that it's my challenge with I don't actually disagree with the policy aim.
Mm.
I believe we have to address housing in all of our communities in some very different ways than we have, and particularly at the level that people who can afford less than $1,000 a month on rent can engage in.
Yes.
We're getting lots and lots of $2,000 a month one-bedroom apartments. That's not actually going to solve the problem.
It won't. Eulalia Mills, always appreciate hearing from you. Thank you so much.
Have a good day.
All right. You too. Take care. We'll take a quick break. Back after this.
If it's happening, it's here. This is Adam Sterling on CFAX 1070.
Texture at 107010 writes, "You are 100% right about the guy peeing in Centennial Square. I observed a guy shooting up between two cars right there on Douglas. Our society has fallen too much." Another texture says, "As a 20-year-old that goes to the club, I see guys and girls urinate on the side of the road all the time." Texture, that's not what I'm talking about. Like, look, all of us were young once. Well, I actually wasn't, but I can imagine what it was like to be young once. This is not late night, 3 a.m, everybody's intoxicated, nobody's around, little kids have been asleep for hours, they're home safe. This is families, daylight, and I'm sorry, but we have standards around here. I don't care who you are, who you think you are, if you're going to relieve yourself and expose yourself in Centennial Square in broad daylight when somebody might have his, little daughter or granddaughter, I'm like, "Oh, daddy, what's that over there?" No, I'm sorry, that's not okay. We have standards around here, and quite frankly, I think that if you do that, they should throw you behind bars for a little while. Not forever. We're not going to ruin your life, but you should live in cells for a little while because you cannot act like an adult human being and be responsible in that moment and act like a civilized person in a place where there's going to be families there. We have young families. They want to take their kids places. It's more expensive than it's ever been for any number of things. Public spaces like Centennial Square should be safe places for young families to take their kids and feel safe and included, not places where you're going to have to answer a whole lot of difficult questions, Daddy, about why that man was acting the way that he did and why he wouldn't put his pants back on. So, no, I totally disagree with you, Dave. If you're out there, don't act that way. We have rules against that kind of stuff, and we do enforce them. Anyway. Those are my opinions. You can agree or disagree. I'm going to tell you you're wrong, though. I'll see you tomorrow.